Welcome to Recode You Launch, the weekly live audience podcast from Code Launch and Improving, where the past, present, and future Code Launch community of startups, investors, and supporters collide interactively. Check it out and join in the fun every week on our Code Launch community Discord server.
Welcome to the WeCode You Launch podcast, produced by Code Launch and Improving, live via Discord and the Code Launch studio at Improving World Headquarters in Plano, Texas. Guadalajara is the site of our next showcase event, Code Launch Mexico 2023, presented by Serenis, on August 30th, 2023, on the campus of Tech de Monterrey. Our guests today are Pros Rent co-founder and CEO Nicholas Powell and Pros Rent CRO Pearson Brock, here to talk about their journey from Code Launch competitor to recent exit. But first, our presenting sponsor, Serenis.io, is a network of experts trying to add rational insight into a growing venture capital market. Hype for technologies, misaligned incentives, and a must-deploy constraint on VC capital is challenging a critical aspect of American capitalism. Serenis is developing tools which connect founders with experts to create bulletproof strategies. Founders can confidentially submit areas of their business plan, pitch deck, technology, or product at Serenis.io. That's Serenis.io. Their platform launches soon. Check out podcast episode number 38 for a lot more details straight from the founder's mouth. But as I said, our guests today are Pros Rent co-founder and CEO Nicholas Powell and Pros Rent CRO Pearson Brock. I am Jason W. Taylor, president and founder of Code Launch. As always, the WeCode You Launch podcast is supported by president and founder of First Gen Agency, MC of Code Launch, and my friend Raheel Malik. Welcome to episode 42, Holmes.
Thanks, bro. Excited about this one. So happy to have Nick and Pearson on from Pros Rent. If no one knows, one of FGA's first clients, and could not be more excited about their success. And yeah, this is going to be good.
That is great. And yes, indeed. Our guests today are Pros Rent co-founder and CEO Nicholas Powell and Pros Rent CRO Pearson Brock. Nick Powell is a Marine, a father, and husband who moved to Texas in 2012 and was inspired by the diversity of business and people in the area. After getting involved in the startup ecosystem, a significant opportunity surfaced in 2016, leading to a partnership with John Clark and Pros Rent. Pearson Brock is the legacy CRO of Pros Rent, now VP of BigRents.com. That's BigRentz.com. He is a new girl dad, a TCU Horned Frog, sorry about the natty, and habitual seller. Fate happened with Pros Rent. Pearson wanted to spin his luck at a tech startup and left a corporate job at the right time to pursue that childhood passion. Fate led him to one of the best experiences of his career, and he's excited to see where it takes him next. Guys, welcome to the WeCode You Launch podcast, and congrats on the exit from the stage in August 2016 through January 2023. Closed deal and exit. Congratulations to Pros Rent and welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Jason.
Yes, sir. Let's start with Pros Rent is on stage in 2016. Original founder John Clark is representing Pros Rent on stage and the competitor. And I would like to hear, how long was it before you got involved, Nick? And maybe you were there as in the audience. I don't remember.
Yeah, so I actually met John Clark back in 2015 through mutual contacts. Oddly enough, I applied for a job at a company he owned, USA Renovations, and we just stayed friends. In 2016, he ran an idea by me that he wanted to pitch at Code Launch in 2016, which ended up being prosrent.com. So I believe I got involved probably about 3 to 4 months before John Clark pitched at Code Launch in August.
Okay, great. So you were there at Code Launch 4. At that time, podcast audience, Code Launch was produced once a year. We were not affiliated with Improving yet. And once a year is all I could afford to produce it. So we did it once a year and we had a lot of fun. And that was the fourth Code Launch. And I remember that group especially because it was the first time in our new, at that time, new venue in Frisco, Texas, which is still over there. And it's really a very large arena. And we built a big stage and we had our event. Our MC back then, Raheel, you'll be delighted to learn, was Susie Solis, who is probably someone that you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really cool person here in Dallas-Fort Worth. She currently works for KRLD Radio in the mornings, right? I hear her on there all the time. So.
Yeah, exactly right.
She was the MC that day. And the startups, that crop of startups was the first time that I thought, man, we have some good ones. Like these are actual startups that are going to succeed. Out of the five that were on stage that day, one of them has exited, Pros Rent. Another one was, who were the guys that won? Park Up Front. They're still going and growing. And Style Row. So if you Google Style Row, you'll see that great, enormous things are happening at Style Row. So all three of them were literally had not a line of code written before that event. So we shouldn't go any further until we let Nick Powell, CEO of co-founder of ProsRent, tell us what ProsRent original concept idea was.
Yeah, happy to. So, you know, ProsRent's original concept or idea was really to become the Airbnb or hotels.com, but for heavy construction equipment rental. John and I detected very early on that there was a huge headache or problem when it came to contractors who traveled on a national basis. And we're looking for those vendor relationships to kind of make sure that they were bidding effectively on rental equipment and have the same service standards across the country instead of just certain markets. So we streamlined the process in 2017. Everything was on Google Sheets and done by hand, unfortunately, up until 2019. And it was a very manual process. But essentially, you could call ProsRent and you could get anything you wanted when it came to rental equipment, whether it was a small porta potty or container, all the way up to a 100,000-pound excavator.
I love the way you guys did it sort of manually. Super lean execution, right? Until you can build the tech, you guys just put your website up and it looked like the website was going to do what it was supposed to do. But if you submitted the form, right, then you guys just got to work, essentially, behind the scenes. Is that pretty much how it was going down?
Yeah. And to kind of piggyback on that, Jason, you know, after we did Code Launch in 2016, it was the team at Code Launch that really helped me and John nail down what exactly the product roadmap should look like, how long it should take to execute, and then actually take, you know, viable steps to accomplish that execution plan. So going back and really understanding, one, the problem that the industry was experiencing, how to solve that problem, and then building the technology once you actually started a customer base that accepted the product solution and wanted to actually, you know, go along for the ride, if you will, as a brand champion.
I think the next step that you guys had to take is what brings a lot of people to Code Launch and where we really help. You said that you got the tech finally finished around 2019. Tell us about the lessons you learned from trying to get your tech built. And if there were any false starts, start overs, vendor troubles, that's what everybody in our community needs to know about.
One thing in the startup ecosystem that you have to learn very quickly is to adapt and overcome. Our original plan was to really integrate with other providers or technology solution providers that already had suppliers that were managing equipment through their technology solutions, whether it was an ERP or something like that. We realized pretty quickly that a lot of the operators and owners of some of these solutions weren't very open about sharing what was under the hood. So we could integrate properly and make a seamless connection between the marketplace and us sending leads over to these systems. In 2019, at the back end, we really decided to pivot and build out the system ourselves. So you know, when it comes to lessons learned and building the tech building the tech in a certain way, I think being able to adapt and change the game plan on the fly is very important. Some things that we weren't really focused on initially that we became hyper-focused on in 2019 when Salah and Med joined is really doing that A-B testing with not only end users, which were the renters in our case, but the actual vendors who are supplying the equipment as well, to help them guide and build your product roadmap with you instead of against you. So we really took some of those lessons and extrapolated in the future and built a product that solved really simple problems that the end users were looking to solve immediately. And we kind of kept some of those big and high level ideas on the wayward to kind of build towards the future towards, if that makes sense. Another thing that I think Pearson and I did very well is just holding each other accountable within the ecosystem, making sure that we're challenging status quo and what's been done in the past. And as a team coming together and launching some of those brand new ideas that ended up being some of the biggest solutions we're able to provide to our end users and client base.
That's awesome. Was there a moment when you had launch day? Do you remember the official, technology product launch? And if you do, how did that go and what's it like?
So we were testing with the core group of users from about 10 different companies for about 60 days before we released the product to the general public. So launch day really came with taking in as many orders as possible, making sure the system didn't crash, and then kind of building from there. So a lot of our customers already had experience using the staging platform. They understood how the product technology worked and now the customer experience flow should go. We really didn't experience many issues on launch day, which was, pretty exciting for Salah, myself, and the team, because we were, as you mentioned, Jason, this is our first go at building technology together. And it was a really cool experience to kind of be able to work hand in hand with our clients and improve the rollout process the next 30 days once it did roll out, then actually get it to a point where the general public was just able to log on and quite simply search for a scissor lift or a porta potty, add it to their cart, and then check out without any human touch involved at all.
I'll tell everybody listening this, PROSRENT stayed involved in our Code Launch community every step of the way during this process, all the way through exit, and they still are now, obviously. We love it when our Code Launch finalists and our Code Launch winners stick with us and come back to our events and continue to leverage them for their own growth, their own visibility, their own networks, and possibly continued fundraising. And PROSRENT brought a scissor lift out to, I think, Code Launch 6, maybe a couple of years later. I remember they rolled in a big old, it must have been electric scissor lift. And I think they were giving kids rides in it at Startup Expo or something. But, we really appreciate that you guys did that and that you stayed involved. And we're really glad for your success. So let's go over to you, Pearson. And then I'm going to let Raheel throw a question or two in here whenever he wants to. But Pearson, when did you join PROSRENT?
So I started in April of 2020, a little over three years ago.
So you came along right when everything got really weird everywhere.
Dude, we were in the heart of COVID. I mean, it couldn't have been worse. I mean, sales were down. We were struggling to get an audience. We were trying to verticalize the company. It was a really tough time to really build rapport and really start, gaining momentum. And I think I came in at the low point. I think we were doing, $70,000 that month that I came in. And of course, we were able to 10x that over the course of my tenure. So it was a really exciting time, but it was also a very challenging time because, we didn't have a huge leg to stand on. We were trying to figure out who we wanted to market to, how to market to. And so it was a really, kind of weird time, as well as the economy, the way COVID had impacted our ways of doing business. I literally came in and Nick kind of befriended me from the beginning and we built the relationship. He was the ops guy. I was the sales guy. So of course you have that ops versus sales mentality. And I think Nick had been doing a lot of the sales over the course of the past few years, but we became quick friends. I bonded with him and John and the rest of the team. And from there, we just started growing by leaps and bounds and started kind of bringing in some core verticals that really helped us kind of launch into the stratosphere and grow very quickly, mind you. It was such a cool experience. It was one of those, childhood dreams that I always imagined. I was doing it, just seeing, all these, Wall Street and all those cool tech movies back from the 90s and the 2000s. I was like, I always wanted to be, as much of a founder as possible. Not actually a founder in that sense for this one startup, but Nick and John made me feel like one. And I got to put up the sales numbers, got to help us grow, got to learn a lot, got to lead with a lot of great, cool people. And it was probably one of the most trying times It was definitely a fun but challenging and eye-popping experience, but it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had, and I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Well, I'll take that opportunity to tell the audience a little story here. So right there in April 2020, Code Launch and Code Authority had just been acquired by Improving, and we were occupying 10,000 square feet of really nice office on the tollway in Frisco, Texas. All of a sudden, I was the only person there, which was just, it was so weird, right? I remember one day in April, right during the lockdown period, I came to the office and there was like a family of ducks living in the bushes of this office building, which was, it used to be like so busy and full of people, there would never be any like wild ducks hanging around. And I was just like, man, this is crazy. About that time, I noticed that I saw a picture of you guys and I realized how big your team had become at PresRent. And it was like a picture on social media or something. And it must have been 7 or 8 people in an office. I was thinking this might be the biggest team of any code launch startup in our history. We were 8 years in at that point. So because it got just so lonely up there, I started trying to invite anybody that wanted to go to the office to come to our office. It wasn't long before you guys came to me with a unique office space challenge. And tell the audience how I was able to help you. Pearson.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. We were kind of, you know, we were at John Clark's office partnering up with one of his other companies, I think USA Renovations at the time. And we kind of had decided that it was time to kind of disrupt would be the wrong word, but to fragment from that situation because they were more focused on their business and we were more focused on our business. And we really wanted to build a team atmosphere and really kind of engage our employees and motivate them and get them in a tech mindset. And so at the time, I think you brought us an opportunity. We got to be in the office with you. We got to work with you and Raheel. It was phenomenal. I remember, you know, I can't tell you how many midnight strategy sessions that Raheel and I had. I remember going into your office, talking about all the cool, exciting things that we were doing. It was definitely a great opportunity. And we're very appreciative, Jason. It was just, you opened your doors to us at a time where we really needed to kind of get outside and really start brainstorming and start growing the business. And I think that you gave us that opportunity and it's one that I won't forget. Maybe we'll have an opportunity another day down the road. Who knows?
And yeah, just to piggyback off of Pearson, Raheel here, he didn't just do that for them. FGA's first office was in a nice, beautiful, way more than I could afford as a startup founder, location at 3001 Dallas Parkway. And when I tell you the panache of, you know, being a founder and your first office is in Hall Park and you're setting meetings and having people come in, it all matters, right? And of course, we live in a virtual world now. And this was, you know, we were still in the pandemic there. And there was a certain group of people that were like, we need to get out of that. So to Pearson's point, you know, coming into each other's offices with our whiteboards, strategizing till the wee hours, you know, it's such a huge part of my success. And to Pearson's point, what he just said, like those late night hours, you don't get that feeling, you know, virtually. You're never going to be able to replicate that and be like, hey, man, what are you doing? I got this idea. Like, can I run it by you? Right. And then putting it on paper and having that experience. So piggybacking off the gratitude. No, it was great having those old Code Authority offices.
I'll say this too, you know, and to that point, you know, we you know, after that, we went to WeWork and I'll tell you guys this, WeWork didn't even compare. It didn't hold a candle to that experience that we got to have together. You know, we were playing bags, we were grabbing a beer, we were, you know, talking about business, like, We had such a lower tier experience at the WeWork Center. That was just, I think it was because we were all in together. I mean, I think Jason is, you know, you were a part of the PresRent, you know, from the beginning, from Code Launch. I think that was cool to have you along for the ride and be able to kind of share our wins with you. And Raheel certainly played a huge component as far as strategy was concerned and on the marketing side. And it was a really cool experience. It's one that, you know, it's weird how times have kind of changed, but now I'm working from home. I got my baby that's, you know, right, 50 feet away from me, my wife that works directly across from me. It's a completely different experience. It's one that I miss and I'll always cherish.
Well, we were really glad to have some human beings in my presence.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, we were growing like crazy as 2019 went along, and the office complex notified us that our density of people in our office was more than our lease allowed for. So we added more space and we bought 55 nice Varidesks. 55 brand new Varidesks is a lot of moolah. It took a whole bunch of effort to get all that done and get them all set up. And just about the time everybody was really enjoying them, and brand new up-down workstations, then the pandemic happened and they were just abandoned. All the people's like decor on their office desk was abandoned, and it was just creepy. So you guys gave me a team and a culture and a buzz that I needed to keep going. So we got through it together. So I think we'd be remiss if we didn't ask Nick to tell us about the fundraising that you did, fundraising challenges that you may have had, and any like notable takeaways or success that you could impart on our community.
Yeah, happy to. So the fundraising process was very new, and not putting it lightly, a very involved process that I wasn't really anticipating. Back in 2020, 2021, I was very involved in the operations, just like Pearson mentioned, helping with sales, helping with finance, pretty much being a jack of all trades. I think really understanding the fundraising process and dedicating one of your top tier assets within the company to that process was something that we had a hard time doing from inception, you know, up until, you know, the back end when we ended up selling. So in 2021, at the back end, I got with the team and said, hey, you know, over the next 6 to 12 months, we really want to achieve these milestones. And the only way we're going to do it is by finding some really great strategic investors and also aligning our advisory board for such. So when it came to the fundraising process, some advice that I could recommend is early on, I think trying to bootstrap and trying to be as lean as possible to get that proof of concept is key. You know, when I was talking to a lot of investors and a lot of potential angels, they, you know, especially in Dallas, they want to understand, you know, exactly what product or solution you're providing, what your return on investment is, and essentially what the lifespan or what the timeline of your startup actually looks like. If you don't have a clear structured plan in place when you're getting asked these questions, the meetings aren't going to go very well. So that's why having individuals like Salar, CTO, and Pearson, Skylar Gamble, our industry expert, and John involved in the process early on is good. But then once the life cycle of the startup starts aging a little bit more, it's more apt that you focus on one singular person going after the fundraising strategy. And that's what we did in 2021. So it, you know, quite literally is like an alternative to the sales process. I had structured a spreadsheet for myself. I was tracking how many co-founders I was reaching out to try to have discussions with. The strategy that I employed was really, you know, going through and understanding which co-founders and companies had gotten investment in the last 6 to 12 months. Did they fit within the realm or the industry of what Prozent was trying to accomplish? Because usually when you're talking to VCs and angels, you want them to understand what you're going for and what industry you're operating in. You don't really want to spend a lot of time educating them or on a learning curve of, you know, what is construction, what is heavy equipment rental. So focusing on those types of co-founders and venture firms that are investing in those types of companies was something that we missed early on in, but we kind of acquired that skill, you know, at the back end of 2021 when I took it over. So it was a lot of outreach, a lot of no's. I think one of my favorite stories was the founder of KFC who pitched the startup or the concept for KFC, you know, 298 different times before he actually got an investor. So having the tenacity and the ability not to give up is, you have to have that in your bones. You know, reaching out to co-founders, I had a lot of really amazing conversations. I had co-founders that weren't willing to maybe introduce me to the network that they have, but they were more than willing to listen and help me adjust the pitch, help me modify it a little bit. So when I did get to those structured meetings, the likelihood of getting a yes was a lot more than a no. So back in 2022, we picked up some financing of about $750,000 or so through a couple angels and a different route, which was a kind of like a business loan, but made for startups, which is another thing that I would recommend any founder or co-founder does is try to understand exactly what avenues you can take when it comes to fundraising, because vesting employees in the company and making sure that everyone's equally vested and has a good, I guess, egg in the basket for when the transition happens or when the transaction happens down the line was usually, you know, what I found was the best way to get a good culture within the organization. But if you give away all your equity to investors early on, it gets harder and harder to do that down the line. So the fundraising process, you know, like I said, Jason, it It wasn't easy. It takes a lot of diligence and a lot of effort. But I found that as long as you have the right advisors and the right network and you're able to adapt and overcome, you eventually find that yes.
Well, that's great. Great advice for our community, trying to keep all that equity. Number one reason why you want to start at Code Launch, because we're going to get your product started and we're not going to take any equity and we're not going to take any cash. And we're going to keep you in our community and keep you educated and learning from great stories and leaders, business successes like Nick and Pearson here. So you are now getting toward the end of this life cycle at ProsRent. Your numbers are going up like crazy, sounds like, thanks to a lot of people, but definitely Pearson had an impact, super positive, 10xing your revenue. And then how does the conversation start looking for an acquisition partner? I'm curious to find out if that was just you fundraising or trying to raise money and turned into an acquisition. Did you decide that now is the moment, let's go find an acquisition partner?
Back when we were in the fundraising, I guess, mode, the private equity markets were doing pretty well. And then they, you know, within 30 to 60 days, things started to lock up pretty quickly. So valuations were starting to go down and the ability to raise money at a decent rate was quickly going out the window. So at this point, we really started identifying different ways that we could, one, see the life cycle of ProsRent and our solution and vision be accomplished. And two, make sure that all of our stakeholders, including our team members, you know, investors and advisors, were able to make out great in a situation that may have taken a lot longer if we didn't think about an exit. So we did hire a venture firm who helped us line up a couple different meetings with some competitors, one in Canada and one in California. You know, when meeting with Scott Cannon and the executive team over at Big Rents, it became pretty clear to me that the culture that they had built and the company and organization they had built was very aligned with what we were trying to accomplish at ProsRent. And their product roadmap and vision for what they were trying to do in the industry was very aligned as well. You know, one thing that, you know, really struck me with Scott and his team is, you know, when it comes to the startup ecosystem, you hear a lot about, oh, we want to disrupt the industry and things like that. But, you know, Scott and his team took a different approach to working with the different vendors and suppliers that they became as equal of a partner for them as they were for their end users and people that were actually renting equipment. So some of the relationships that Big Rents has been able to build over the last 10 to 15 years with their vendors is something that ProsRent would have had to work on for, you know, another at least 3 to 5 years to be able to get in a position where we were highly competitive with them. So after chatting with them a few times and getting some insight from the team, you know, we decided that it would behoove us and it would probably be very beneficial to merge with Big Rents and combine our forces and power and go ahead and take this industry and vertical by storm.
Awesome. So it sounds to me like a little bit like what you said is that the economic conditions brought on by the dramatically fast increase in interest rates and the contraction of investment for equity capital, that those conditions kind of led to your change in focus and timing. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, as you're well aware, everything's about timing in the startup ecosystem. So we were coming off a really great year in 2021. As Pearson mentioned, we almost 10x'd our revenue within 12 months. So we're in a really good spot to be able to go out and raise funds. And, you know, just unfortunately with the timing and the economy and what was going on, it just didn't make sense to, you know, give up that big of a portion of the pie for the amount of investment capital that people were willing to invest.
Good lesson there. Always paying attention to the economic conditions that impact your business. We do have a small audience, as we usually do here on the Code Launch Accelerator Discord server. If you have a question for any of us here, the two people from ProsRent or Heal or I about Code Launch, do the ask to speak bit, and we'll know that you want to be brought to the stage and we'll let you ask your question. And then, so now you have an acquisition partner, and I think that you will probably share with us how important it is to have experienced representation through that process. It feels expensive, but it's really important. It was important to me. So why don't you characterize and share experiences with representation through the final negotiations and closing process?
Yeah. So, you know, being a first time, you know, founder and this being the first transaction I've ever gone through, I really wasn't understanding fully what to expect, the timeline and things like that. We got connected with Vela Wood back in 2022, which had a very diverse set of lawyers from tax attorneys to contract law to merger and acquisitions. So they really came in and helped not only educate myself, but our team members on what exactly it looked like at the closing table and how to manipulate, you know, terms in your favor to make sure that downstream and you know, downstream of the closing and transaction, that your team is still protected. And that's exactly what Baila Wood did for us. I can't thank Paul, Alexis, and Candace enough for all the hard work they did. They were very accommodating with the new founder and, you know, very patient. But the total all in all, when it was said and done, took about 8 months to close. We started, I think, in early 2022 and finished right at the back end of 2022, heading into 2023, which is something that I wasn't really expecting, but they told me could take that long, right? So being a millennial myself, I expected things to happen pretty quickly. And there was a lot of back and forth on terms that really Baila Wood helped me understand of, you know, hey, this is why these terms are so important. This is how it affects you downstream. And this is why we should fight for it. So to your point, Jason, you know, I can't really place a value on them, but what I can safely say is the value that we got from Baila Wood far exceeded the amount that we had to pay to close the transaction and get their assistance.
That's great to hear. And Baila Wood is definitely a prominent startup space firm here in, I think they're in Austin and Dallas, Fort Worth primarily, but they could be other places. Definitely good group. So when I heard that you were being represented by them, I was happy to hear that. And I figured that would lead to a good outcome, and it has. So you guys closed this deal. I have one more kind of question. You've closed the deal in January, but the final signature on ProsRent's total closure is not until next year because you guys are in the earnout phase. So tell our startup community that hopes they are someday in an earnout phase about the earnout phase, what it is, what kind of challenges they can expect.
Sure. So the deal, to your point, Jason, was structured in an earnout fashion over about 15 months. So, you know, essentially the way the deal worked was our book of business essentially would obviously have to keep doing business with Big Rents through the transaction. And there's equity involved in the new company, Big Rents, as well as a cash payout portion involved over 15 months. As far as challenges go, I think with any transition or any transaction, there's always going to be some barriers or new processes to learn. What I can say is our team was very technology focused and forward. So coming in and learning all the new processes of Big Rents and the systems that they used to accomplish their day-to-day was a little bit easier than transitioning our clients. So there was a lot of different work that we had to do to really, I want to say, massage our current client base into understanding the Big Rents way, if you will, and then getting them to put orders in and to actually recreate the process they had at ProsRent, but with the Big Rents platform. So to date, it's gone very well. We've transitioned 99% of all of our top tier clients. They're very happy renting with Big Rents. The thing that I loved about Big Rents is, like I mentioned before, their access to equipment was a lot more broad and a lot larger than ours. So when it comes to our end user base, they're able to count on support in areas where we weren't able to support them before. We're able to get rental equipment out in Canada and Puerto Rico now, which is really amazing. And we've been able to really step up the game when it comes to supporting our clients and what they're renting on a national basis.
So in 15 months from the closing date, we will know the final chapter of ProsRent from the stage in August 2016 to the closing table in January 2023 and to final exit, sounds like about April 2024. And we have a live audience member here now who is ready to ask a question. User MVEVE, you can unmute yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me and congrats, ProsRent, on your story. I recently attended a code launch, my first actually, PitchFest code launch event in Atlanta, I think just a couple of weeks ago. I'm interested in perhaps applying for a tech startup that I'm starting to work on. Can you talk about the experience after you were able to get into the program? Can you talk about what it's like to actually work together as founder and code launch to iterate through those cycles and you know, just what you can expect if you do actually decide to join in?
Yeah, happy to. And thank you very much for the question. I think one of the biggest takeaways of code launch in 2016 was the networking community that they provided. And that included, you know, Jason Taylor and a few others that were early in code launch. When it came to working with them, we brought code launch a very big idea. And I think one thing that, you know, John and I, my business partner, didn't realize was how to break down the idea into multiple different, you know, modules and then perfect each module before trying to jump or leap to the next giant idea that you had. So Jason and his team really worked with us to simplify our product roadmap and really structure a position for us to get from point A to point Z without having to have a burn rate of $1 million per month and trying to do everything and accomplish everything all at once. So that's something that I really appreciated from the Code Launch team. When it came to networking, the Code Launches that I attended afterwards and just doing general follow-ups with Raheel and Jason over the course of the last few years, I was able to get introduced to very many different founders, advisors, and even potential investors that really gave me the information and knowledge to bring back to my team to make sure that, one, we were on the right path, that we were getting more focused on, you know, building for the long run rather than building for the next 30-day sprint, and then actually taking it from, you know, 1 million in revenue all the way up to 8 million in revenue through different growth cycles. So it's really the networking community that Code Launch is able to provide and recreate on a yearly basis that enables young founders like myself, John, and then Pearson to really meet new people, kind of flesh out brand new ideas and strategize together, and then build for the future from there. You know, the cool thing about Code Launch is we're all in it together, right? We're all founders. We all most likely deal with some of the same things on a daily basis when it comes to our startups. So really having that outlet and having others that have experienced it was honestly a rock for me as well. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And if I could just ask one follow-up, what is the length of the project from acceptance to pitch day? I know that there's an application process, and if you get accepted, then you're invited to pitch. And if you win the pitch, then you get your MVP built. And so I'm just curious about what that timeline typically looks like as well.
Yeah. First of all, welcome to the Code Launch community and thank you for attending in Atlanta. Atlanta was a great event, probably the best production that we've had, like very few little glitches and really great startups, super good energy in the crowd, and we were really happy with it. So glad to have you still here and expressing interest. So the process works totally different now than it did when Pros Rent was at Code Launch 4. So ever since we were acquired in 2019, we have tried to make Code Launch into a faster and more educational process for every startup. So what it is, first of all, you have to identify the event that you want to compete in. And the next one that you're eligible for is the DFW event. And that's because normally you'd be able to apply just to the very next Code Launch, wherever it was. But the one we're doing in Mexico is open to Mexico residents and Mexico startups only, which is something new we're trying to elevate and make sure we get a lot of interest from the country and the communities in Mexico. But the DFW event in the fall is open to anybody, even internationally. And I believe we're taking applications on August 23rd. That's the first day you can apply. So that's really not very far away. 3 months, almost exactly from today. Once you apply, you know, we go through a process. We look at all of them. We try to pick out the ones that we're interested in. And we let them, we sort of accept them into the program. And that's when we start challenging the startups to level up. And so what we do is we try to, basically, we impose upon you to fix the easy to fix best practices that we know you can do that you haven't done yet. And we challenge our startups to go through a process of self-examination, find their weaknesses and fix them. We also challenge them to do product market fit research, establish future partners and other techniques that we know lead to success and that we know will lead to investors having a greater interest in them down the road if they tackle now. So that's a process that takes about 6 weeks and there's multiple rounds. And eventually 30 of those startups will get pitches. Pitch meetings are basically how would you characterize that, Raheel? Raheel is intimately involved with our pitch meetings and our pitch coaching afterward for our finalists. If you could characterize for MVE.
So thank you. And great question. And welcome, obviously, to the community. We get a lot of applications, right, to Jason's point. And we spend that first round as a committee picking out what we believe to be the best 30. Now, from that, everybody gets invited to a pitch session where we ask them to treat it as close to they can to the Code Launch format. But we don't really hold them to it. But the Code Launch format is 4-minute pitch and 8 slides. And you're probably saying, oh, my idea is so vast. My idea is so complicated. I can't get it into 4 minutes and 8 slides. Well, that's kind of the point too, right? We need you to be able to condense this thing, because most of the other pitch competitions that you're ever going to be a part of, some are going to be 2 minutes, and some, the most we've ever seen, are five, right? If not, like maybe six. But also for you, it's important that you are able to deliver this highly complex idea and potentially world-changing problem in an efficient manner, because a lot of times with investors or public, you're only going to get that 3-4 minute time frame, with the goal being to get the next meeting. But anyway, so you will pitch Jason and I and a few others in the committee, and we'll provide open, honest feedback, right? As if we were investing potentially in your business, or, you know, thinking about it through the lens of our stage, thinking about it through the lens of our investment community, and then our software development partners, right? So you made one comment about if you win Code Launch, you get to MVP. It's not that. And I'll kick it back to Jason here to finish the process. But out of those 30, the 30 get pitch meetings, then we identified what we believe to be the top 10 most investable and most deliverable that can have something produced for them by our software development partners.
At that point, we take from the 30 and we will pick our favorite 10 or 12. And knowing that we only have 6 hackathon sponsors per event, that means that some of our favorites, 5 or 6, are going to not get picked. And they're going to end up in a pool eligible for the next event. And that is because we want our hackathon sponsors to make the final choice of who they want to code for, because they're in a competition and that they're paying to be in. And we want them to have the best possible outcome. And it's real important for the hackathon sponsors to pick a team that they technically have capability to help. So you wouldn't want to stick someone who has an iOS app on a professional dev team that everybody on the dev team was working on Android apps. Conversely, you know, you do want them to have a choice where they feel like a strong match. And also maybe they just like the business idea. They think that it might win the event. They think that something else about the startup is attractive to help them win the coveted TCL best hackathon team trophy that you saw Improving Atlanta hold up on the stage in Atlanta. And we make Improving, who's always going to be one of our hackathon sponsors at every event, we make them pick last in this process. We call it the Professional Coder League Draft. And at the end of that draft, they get to pick. So funny enough, it really doesn't really matter, I don't think, where you pick in the order. Several of our most recent winners were the 6th and final pick. So, and that's how the 6 end up on stage. So if that probably sounds like a lot, really it's just about 6 weeks of effort from finding out you're in to finding out if you're on the stage or not. The trials and tribulations that we're going to put you through are designed to level you up and give you a better chance to succeed.
Thank you. That was very clear. I have a much better sense of what I'm getting myself into. Thanks again.
Well, welcome. We're happy to have you. And I'll tell you that a lot of our finalists that are on a stage, it's not their first code launch to try to get on. In fact, it's these days, it's about 50-50. So out of a crop of 6 finalists, it won't be uncommon to have 3 that are on their 2nd, 3rd, or even 4th code launch competition. And some people learn like what we're looking for and how to do it by doing it. And then examining, like looking in the mirror later and coming back and doing it again, and they get better and they get better. And eventually we just can't keep them out of the draft because they're so attractive. One of the best examples I saw of that in Atlanta was FundHub, who won the judge's choice, as you saw on stage. And FundHub, it was their 2nd code launch, but their polish and their pitch deck, their execution of the homework challenges was like totally perfect the 2nd time through. And so we put them in the draft and they got picked. Can't remember who picked them, but they were picked. Oh yeah, Build Technology Group picked them. So that's how they got on the stage, and the rest is history. Thanks a lot for your question today. We don't have any more questions from the audience, so we'll go ahead and wrap things up here. Thanks to my Code Launch teammates, our co-host Raheel Malik, new teammate engineer Chris Klein, and our guests today, Nick Powell and Pearson Brock of ProsRent, the first most meaningful exit in Code Launch history from stage in 2016 to closed and acquired January 2023. And a big thanks to our 2023 presenting sponsor, Serenis. We are taking applications right now at codelaunch.com for the first international code launch in our history, Code Launch Mexico 2023. Will be on August 30th in Guadalajara, Mexico. All startups must be Mexico-based to be eligible, and all content will be in English. Code Launch DFW is November 15th here in Dallas-Fort Worth. We begin taking applications for DFW on August 23rd. Remember, people, keep your feet on the ground, but keep reaching for the startups.